Let me tell you a little bit about Richard Grove. In 2003, he filed for federal whistleblower protection under the Sarbanes-Oxley Act of 2002. In 2006, he released an MP3, a two-hour public disclosure, Project Constellation, a message to the future of America. And what may have sounded like conspiracy theories in 2006, data mining and spying on citizens, the planning of financial catastrophes, NSA, Google, and corporate media partaking in the demolition of our liberties, proves today to be relevant and verifiable historic facts related by Richard during his public disclosure via Project Constellation and evident in his continued productions ever since. And since then, Richard has created more than 500 hours of educational and informative media productions, including a comprehensive conscious curriculum to teach individuals methods for learning anything and everything for themselves. Some of the more powerful publications, including State of Mind, The Psychology of Control, which we have at the Power Mall, History So It Doesn't Repeat, and The Ultimate History Lesson with John Taylor Gatto, which we have at the Power Mall also. In 2013, 10 years after blowing the whistle, Richard was nominated by author G. Edward Griffin to be listed in Freedom Force International Hall of Honor. Richard's 2013 Tragedy and Hope trailer illustrates his talent for producing media to illustrate the big picture, which he observed before retiring from corporate America. And we're looking forward to having him join us in just a little bit. Welcome back to the Power Hour. Thank you for joining us. Caring about your world, doing the next right and honorable thing. And boy, nothing could be more true of our two next guests coming up. I'm going to bring on Richard Grove first, and then we'll have Paul Vergy joining us a little bit later. But I want to give you some background and some 101 on who these gentlemen are independently, because they have done so much in their own lives and so much research to bring us to where we are and knowing what's really going on in this world, and that's what we all want to know. So I've already given you the bio on Richard Grove, and by the way, they are, Richard and Paul are instrumental in bringing us the movie, The Cause of Effect. I love that title. Hijacking Humanity, and also State of Mind. They appear in that. And I'm really pleased to have Richard Grove join us today. Thank you, Richard, for joining us in the Power Hour today.
Good morning, Joyce.
Good morning. I am so anxious to have you tell the listeners who and what you are, because there's a lot in your bio they're not going to get from you. You were a major whistleblower, and I think that because it's been so long since we've had you on the show, we need to go back and do a basic 101 of how you connected or disconnected with the Sarbanes-Oxley and became a whistleblower a few years ago. Go ahead and tell the listeners if you don't mind.
Well, I'm just the average guy who was working a corporate job, and over time I started seeing things that, you know, I thought were illegal, so I did some research, and it turns out that those types of activities had a high likelihood of being illegal. And so when you raise it up through the chain of command within a corporation and go through their so-called channels, I expected people to be interested and try to find out what the problem was, but instead they were just more interested in continuing to sell a knowingly flawed product to the public. In my case, it was I was working as a software salesperson at an enterprise software company, which means that they sell pretty much only to Fortune 100 to 500 companies. So it's not the type of thing that you would use on your desktop computer at home. It's the type of thing that information technology infrastructure within a large multi-billion-dollar corporation would put there. And the software specifically was supposed to prevent people from deleting emails so that corporations could no longer be put at risk from business being transacted and then not having records of it. So this was after the Tyco and Enron and Anderson accounting scandals of the early 2000s. And I thought that this was a good way to, put my time in at a corporation. It was a good living. It seemed to be an honest product when I started. That was the whole idea, is that it was going to protect our nation from financial calamities on a mass scale, which would, you know, if you look at the Enron scandal, it crashed right below, right before 9/11. So these types of scandals can pop up at any time in our environment economically, and it seemed like a good idea to try to protect companies. And there was a 2002 congressional mandate called Sarbanes-Oxley, named after the two sponsors of the bill. And what Sarbanes-Oxley was a step-by-step protection mechanism so that you couldn't have these types of large-scale financial fraud. Well, my clients were some of the largest financial services companies in the world, and one client in particular in July of 2003 was Tyco International, which was already under FBI and SEC investigation. And when I showed them how we could help them save money because they were under mandate to save these documents because they were being investigated, it was indicated to me, not by some underling, but by the chief general counsel, the top attorney in the company, told me that they didn't want to keep this information. They wanted to know how to delete it. And so after that meeting, I had a lot of questions because that's not the software that I thought I was selling, but she seemed to have an interest in talking to some of our technical people who thought that they could help her facilitate that goal. A couple weeks later, I was at the National Association of Securities Dealers. Now, this is like a watchdog group for the securities industry, and when I was selling them the product, their technical guy said that this is that there's a backdoor in the product, and it puts companies at risk, and that they wouldn't buy it because of that reason.
Okay, we got a 1 minute, 10-second break. We'll be back after this 1 minute, 10-second break with Richard Grove. Stay tuned to the Power Hour. This is Joyce Riley. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Power Hour. Thank you for joining us. We're talking to Richard Grove today. He has put a lot of the information into The Cause of Effect, Hijacking Humanity, which is an amazing two-hour DVD. We'll give you a lot of good inside information as to what happened, how we have been hijacked, are being hijacked. And you were talking about your whistleblower situation with Sarbanes-Oxley. Go ahead, please, Richard.
So while I'm still an employee and attempting to make my living by selling the software, I'm finding out over a series of weeks, going from July into September of 2003, that the software puts my clients at more risk than they would be if they just didn't follow the mandate at all. So I'm going through channels. I had trained clients on how to blow the whistle with Sarbanes-Oxley and what the regulations were. So when I was forced into, from being retaliated at work into blowing the whistle, I expected the corporation to say, well, this is a legitimate problem, let's look into it. And instead, I was asked to meet with their head attorney without an attorney present, which I know, I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I know that you don't meet with an attorney unless you have your own.
Mm-hmm.
And so then that pushed me into a situation where I had to file a lawsuit. The lawsuit went on for years. I presented evidence in court that was not recognized in the judge's decision at all, like a lot of evidence that wasn't recognized in the judge's decision. And then I went to Lowell Bergman from PBS Frontline, and the end result after a year of dealing with that situation was these things happened, but there's nothing that they can do about it because they have a conflict of interest, so they can't publish anything on it.
So what happened as a result of what you did then?
Well, I found myself without a career and in an area where I was encountering a lot of information about the world that I wasn't taught in school. So that told me that I need to go back to the drawing board, figure out what's going on. Did I bump into something that's isolated, or is this something that's more all-encompassing? And what I found, I expected not to find too much and maybe go back into the corporate world, but I kept finding more and more evidence that pointed to a contrary map of the terrain, a more accurate map of the terrain than that which we're given through public schooling. So that's really what interested me into, putting a lot of time into figuring out what actual evidence and artifacts exist that reflect contradictions or go outside of this artificial scarcity that we're given through public schooling, meaning that there's a lot more information there than what they're letting us know about. It'd be like if you thought the world was a kiddie pool and then you look out at the ocean. It's like there's an ocean of information that's valid that they're not presenting us with, and that's an interest to me.
Well, I think that what you did is a lesson to all of us. You do the right thing and you think the world will come and the world will care and the world will want to know what you have found. And in reality, you are the one that takes the hit from it. But it opens up your world to understand that there's more out there and there's so much deceit taking place. Now, is that why you created Hijacking Humanity? Was that your impetus for that?
Well, really, Hijacking Humanity was Paul Verge's original project, which he had interviewed me for. I mean, this was years ago. It was probably 2006, 2007. And from seeing how Paul can put together a movie and setting up the lights and the cameras and the microphones and all this, after that interview, I thought, this is something I can learn how to do. And that's really sparked the interest and the friendship that Paul and I have had since then.
An amazing relationship. Why don't you tell us, we've only got about a minute here before the break, but tell us, you introduced Paul Verge for us, why don't you?
Well, Paul Verge is a filmmaker who lives in Canada. Excuse the traffic behind me. I guess somebody's got a squeaky fan dog. Paul wanted to be a filmmaker when he grew up, and he's actually living that dream. It's not a dream that makes people rich, but it makes you happy because you're learning about something you're interested in and you have passion about. One of the interview that Paul shot with me after Hijacking Humanity, I think you used to carry, it was called 2020 Hindsight, Censorship on the Front Line. And that's a DVD that the Power Hour store had in stock at one point. And on that DVD are a whole bunch of the court documents and the documents that are involved with whistleblowing. So if you never thought about writing and you get into one of those situations, consider that there's going to be a lot of writing involved and a lot of responding to letters.
All right, we're going to be back after this three-minute break. We're going to talk about what's really going on, what's really happening with our guest today, Paul Verge, and with Richard Grove. Stay tuned to the Power Hour. This is Joyce Riley. We'll be back after this three-minute break. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Power Hour. Thank you for joining us, caring about your world and the next right and honorable thing. We're talking to Paul Verge and Richard Grove today. Richard Grove, the whistleblower. Paul Verge made the documentary, The Hijacking of Humanity, The Cause of Effect. Paul, I want to say thank you very much for joining us today on the Power Hour. Welcome.
Thank you for having me back.
Absolutely. You know, a lot has happened since we've had you on the show before. A lot of things taking place. You mentioned about Ed Snowden. You mentioned about some of the tactics that are being used to establish the quote-unquote New World Order. What do you see as being the biggest issue right now? I mean, if you were to look at everything and kind of try and focus on one issue, what is your concern with the world as we see it today?
I think the biggest concern right now in general is centralization of power, but to drill down even further, it would be the technocracy in terms of the philosophy to achieve further centralization of power. And all a technocracy is the rule of people, the management of populations through technology, through the knowledge of engineers and scientists and backed by an elite who can benefit from this kind of network of technology and how they want to create a surveillance state. And yeah, with Edward Snowden, I mean, people have been talking for the last 15 years about the NSA and what capabilities do the NSA have in terms of snooping on the internet. And with the revelations of Ed Snowden, we all found out that it's much worse than we could have imagined. They can pretty much read every email, look at every phone call, and see, we all have to ask ourselves, what kind of world do we want to live in? Do we still care about privacy rights while we, you know, thank the blessing of technology? We have to look at the other side of the coin, which is, for all that convenience that technology brings, what is the actual price that we pay?
Well, you know, when Ed Snowden first did what he did and then went to Russia, a lot of people challenged that and questioned that. I think they're more comfortable with the idea that he went to Russia now. But what is it, out of everything that we've learned from Ed Snowden, that impacts us? What have we learned? Yeah, we've learned they read the emails, but what else have we learned? Or have you been into his emails and looking at those emails?
I've gone through several of the presentations that Snowden's given in terms of the more technically detailed ones. And what he does is reveal different NSA programs like X Key Score to actually show how not just the U.S., but the Five Eyes countries, which are New Zealand, Australia, Britain, Canada, and the U.S., they all technically don't spy on their own citizens. What they do is they access the data from one of the four other countries who are spying on our citizens, and that's the way they get away around the legal framework, but essentially it still allows them the same end goal, which is to be able to spy on the entire citizenry. And the main problem with this, because a lot of people say, well, if you don't have anything to hide, you shouldn't worry about privacy. Privacy matters to everyone. No one would like 100% of their search terms or their mental contents to be exposed for all to see, because there's a lot of embarrassment, a lot of shame there. And so we have to ask ourselves, do privacy rights matter? Does especially in a time where government's moving from transparency more to more secrecy, we have to say, does the right of government to have secrecy extend to us, or do we get our rights from government? It's a very interesting and complex philosophical debate.
I think there are a lot of people that think that Ed Snowden is in the right place in being in Russia today, especially for his protection. What about the other gentleman, the reporter who or journalist who is in the Ecuadorian embassy, has been there for 2 or 3 years? What is he showing us, or what is he seeing now?
Well, that's Julian Assange, and he represents WikiLeaks, which is kind of an online repository for exposed secrets. And it's interesting because WikiLeaks was responsible for releasing the video that Bradley or Chelsea Manning brought to them, which was of the slaughter in Iraq of Reuters journalists. And that video has gotten around online. And because of the retribution against both Manning and Julian Assange, I think that's why Edward Snowden made the decisions that he did to get out of the States, to make it harder for him to be captured and treated the way he is, because he's pretty much a whistleblower, just like Rich. And as Rich learned, you know, over 10 years ago, when you go through the official channels, the whistleblowing channels that have been set up, in a sense, it's sort of a honeypot to catch people who go through official channels so that they have kind of a filter there to make sure it doesn't get too high of an investigation. And once in a while, of course, someone will get through. But for the most part, I think that there's hundreds of different kinds of whistleblowers like Rich and like Edward Snowden who never get a chance to have their story heard, because they get censored or the story gets kiboshed before it gets to the mainstream media.
Yeah, and the idea that people really want whistleblowers to come forward is such a farce. Back when I was a Medicare whistleblower, you know, they had all these call 1-800, Medicare numbers, 1-800 Medicare fraud numbers, and report any Medicare fraud. Well, I was reporting something that was a huge Medicare fraud. And it turned out to be a case called Riley v. St. Luke's Episcopal Hospital that was done a few years ago. And I was a whistleblower for 13 years in that case. But the reason I mention this is because there must have been 15 different Medicare call us, we care about fraud numbers, and not one of them ever responded when I called them. I called them all. And I had to go through a private attorney to address the case because I really wanted to bring this forward. But they didn't really care. That's not their issue. That's part of the scam.
And I think they just want to create disincentives to so that basically you want to have it appear that there's legitimate whistleblower channels so that everyone can say, oh, you know, everyone should just report something if they see something. But in reality, the whistleblower channels are set up as a catch-all to stop legitimate whistleblowing. And we're seeing that in your case with Rich, with Edward Snowden, with Julian Assange, with Bradley Manning. It's about creating a public perception that all whistleblowers are either phony or shouldn't have taken the effort in the first place. And so it's a double standard, essentially, where they're putting forth telling people to report something if they see it. But when you actually go to report it, you find a lot of resistance. And that can be extremely frustrating to anyone involved.
Well, let me go back to Richard, because Richard Grove, that had to be, you know, you think you build a field and they'll all come. And then what happens is you're the one that becomes the persecuted individual, the crazy person, the crackpot. And that had to be a real lesson for you, just like it was for me.
Well, it's learning the definition of irony when the situation you expect is the opposite of what you expected.
Ooh, good point, good point.
You know, you expect when you say something, you know, they have these laws, and you think they have these laws for a reason. But those laws aren't actually being enforced, and when you go to tell an authority about that, they either threaten you or they try to put you in a compromising situation, like you did something wrong by noticing that they're doing something illegal and wanting to do something about it.
Right. You are the bad guy. How dare you do that? I mean, when I did this, my case, they tried to bring wiretapping charges against me because I could prove it and because I had done what I had done. I mean, they'll stop at nothing. And it's just, it's incredible what takes place. Let me go to the issue of technocracy rising, because I know that you have interviewed, published interviews with Patrick Wood and William Binney, which we had on the show not too long ago, whistleblower William Binney. Talk to me about what we would be surprised if we knew regarding technocracy and how the trilaterals are using it to create the new world order.
Well, Technocracy, which was designed in the 1930s, there's a technocracy study course that was published in 1934 that kind of lays out their agenda. But it's an energy-based economy. It's a type of currency that's based on energy. Now, if you look at what's going on today, you've got this thing called Bitcoin. There's all these other type of cryptocurrencies. There's a long history of NSA and GCHQ trying to develop a cryptocurrency. And the pricing for, you know, for instance, with Bitcoin, it was originally priced with how much electricity goes through it and the cost of that, and that's how it was generated. So it's an energy-based currency. So there's certain ironies between this thing that's going to set us free and these plans to enslave us. And if you don't look at both sides, I think that sometimes people get played.
Well, without a doubt. But what is really, what's behind Bitcoin? It, you know, Bitcoin being a an item that came down, it seemed like so fast, all of a sudden it was there, and it was well accepted without there being the usual kind of back and forth as to whether or not it would work or not. What, where did Bitcoin come from?
Well, Bitcoin came from a need to facilitate a currency transaction without putting the banks in the middle. So this opens up the deep web type of markets where people just want to do, you know, anonymous peer-to-peer trading without, a third party taking fees and things like this. But also from a technocracy standpoint, that's one of the essential facets to make globalism work, is to have all the currencies go through some sort of crash, and then, oh, there's this savior that's available to everybody and that nobody knows how it was created or really to the nth degree how it works or where all those little pieces of technology that came together, you know, came from. So there's a lot with, you know, the intermingling of the history that's come up over the past 60, 70 years, and all this new emerging technology, all the smart devices and smart grid and the smart meters, all these things that have smart in front of them are actually being used as a type of Soviet Russia gulag system that's collecting and informing on us 24/7 and mapping out our coordinates to artificial intelligence computers that are, you know, they're not being used to preserve our freedom. There's a lot of tax dollars being used to do things that are not in favor of our freedom. They're antithetical to freedom. So this is where William Binney's testimony as a whistleblower comes in, Patrick Wood's research as a trilateral expert over the years, and merging that in recently, he sees the similarity between technocracy and what Brzezinski has called for. And I think that his book, Technocracy Rising, is a primary example of what can be done when you actually take some time to look at these things and assemble and organize the history, which is why I interviewed him a couple months ago.
All right, we'll be back. I'm going to let you refresh us as to what the whistleblowing of William Binney was all about. We'll be back after this 4-minute break with our guests today, Richard Grove and Paul Verge. Stay tuned to the Power Hour. This is Joyce Riley. Welcome back to Power Hour. Thank you for joining us. Just to let you know, if you're watching this show, listening to this show on the 28th of September live, then I just want to let you know that the president has been talking before the United Nations and the stock market dropped to 191 while he was talking, which I thought that was kind of interesting. We're talking to Paul Verge and Richard Grove today on Technocracy Rising. And first of all, Richard, if you don't mind, I'd like, or Paul, either one of you, I don't care, but define for us what technocracy is so we can all be on the same page as we begin this discussion.
This is Rich, and technically, if you break down the word, it's rule over people by technology. So that's the traditional way you would break down the word. The way it was formulated in the 1930s by this group at Columbia University, or they were using Columbia University property. I can't say that they're functionally Columbia University. But they came up with this way because it was the Great Depression, and they were looking for ways out and ways to use technology. So the original design isn't necessarily malicious. It's a group of individuals who were trying to seek a better way and find solutions. That kind of was taken over a series of decades, and it was reflected in Zbigniew Brzezinski's Between Two Ages, where he says that the technotronic era of America is the post-industrial age, where they're going to come to use mass surveillance and these types of security to rein in the freedom of individuals as a measure of controlling them.
Okay, Paul, go ahead.
So what it really is, it's a philosophy for population management. It's a kind of an operating system for how to manage populations in terms of social engineering, in terms of, like Rich said, mass surveillance, And with today's technology, it goes further in terms of not just surveying people, but actually recording all their actions. And to me, the largest problem of that is once people's actions are recorded, you can then go retroactively and take those actions out of context to build a criminal case or some kind of case against people based on cherry-picked actions that are assembled out of context. And that's where we get profiling and the concept of people behavioral predictive programming, where essentially they can try and guess if somebody's going to be a criminal, and that's called pre-crime, as reflected in the film and the story Minority Report. So that's the kind of future that technocracy envisions, where the government has not only total power, but total access to information in order to do as it pleases.
You know, when you talk about total access to information, I've always wondered, how does anybody go about whistleblowing now against the government? Or how does anybody bring a suit against the government? Or how does anybody conduct business without any confidentiality because they know everything? I mean, they're going to know both sides of the case before the case goes forward.
Well, and as we've seen with the Silk Road case, the federal agents broke into the Bitcoin account, so it's not really that secure. They stole almost $1 million that's been proven in court, Secret Service and DEA.
And who is they? Who is they that stole?
The Secret Service agent and the DEA agent who were involved in investigating the Silk Road case, the investigators broke into the Bitcoin account and stole $1 million. That's
wow.
Been in court recently. So what you've got is someone like Snowden who sees what happened to William Binney. William Binney went and brought these allegations, the proof that they were doing this stuff, and he was arrested. They, you know, tried to put him in prison under the Espionage Act. So someone like Snowden, I don't have any comments on him as an individual or his character, but from looking at the documents that have been released, he's demonstrating, he's like, here's GCHQ, which is the British NSA, and the American NSA, in league together, to basically map the coordinates of all the human behaviors in their countries, not for the purposes of keeping us free, but for figuring out how to create something called parallel construction, where they can take evidence that they've collected illegally, skeleton out a case, and then try to flesh it out in court. Because the data that they're collecting is still illegal in most cases to present in court. They use this as a technique to frame people, and like Paul said, once they've got enough of your personal data, your personal habits, and see the different patterns, and they've got algorithms to figure this stuff out, they can set out to destroy people, innocent people. And I think that, you know, there was a saying once, better that 99 guilty people go free than one innocent person be jailed.
Mm-hmm.
That's a massacre of that quote. But that was the idea. And so what you've got is no longer just, you know, one country. Paul mentioned the Five Eyes countries. These are the five English-speaking countries that have, interbred intelligence agencies. And it's being done from their standpoint on other countries. So you got them spying on us, and you got them spying on everybody else. And it's a problem that's only going to get worse as long as we continue to use technology without questioning it.
All right. I would like to take a couple of phone calls for those of you that have significant questions for either of our guests, Paul Verge or Richard Grove, after this 3-minute break. Stay tuned to the Power Hour. This is Joyce Riley. 33 minutes after the hour. Thank you so much for joining us in the Power Hour today. Just to let you know that Hijacking Humanity is available at the Power Mall. State of Mind also is available at the Power Mall. Please take advantage of these incredible documentaries, the Hijacking Humanity, 2 hours. And I remember watching this and just being amazed at how good, at what quality information there is in Hijacking Humanity. And I hope it's on sale, by the way, for $22.46. It has over a dozen original interviews, focuses on the last century of historical changes to the power structures of the control of the earth, from the origins of the North America central banks to the income tax, legal system, fake terror threats, and other plans of population control. And it brings you up to speed on what's happening in the hidden corridors of the elite and their think tanks and the secret societies for the last 100 years. Talking to Paul Verge and Richard Grove today on the subject of, well, we've been talking about technocracy rising. And you were talking about William Binney. I think that, you know, we had him on the show, and I don't think people really appreciate what this man went through. But getting back to the issue, though, of both sides or of the government having all the information, how do we ever have any kind of a fair situation when it comes to whistleblowing and or conducting business? How can it be fair?
Well, I don't know that it'll ever be fair because it's a kind of a rigged game that they've got running. But the Internet helps to level the playing field. If you work with other smart, conscious individuals, things can happen out there. Like I said, I don't have any comments on Snowden, the individual, but as far as what he's done to present evidence to the public through a channel that would, you know, take the certain precautions they need to so nobody gets hurt. These PowerPoint presentations are very telling. And after I interviewed William Binney, he sent me a couple of presentations that he thought were very interesting. And I had the opportunity to talk to him for about 3.5 hours in that interview. So he really was able to break down the fact that once upon a time, according to people who believe the official story, the NSA was there in America's best interest, when really it was just it's a tether into America from GCHQ. So government communications headquarters in Great Britain has existed since, I think, 1901, and they would spy on radios and telegraph lines and the Atlantic cable for like 50 years before we created NSA. So when you look at, you know, it's like a child compared to the mature adult of GCHQ. So you've got a lot of people there that believe the rah-rah story that we're fighting the Cold War and we're trying to protect ourselves from the Soviets. And there's a lot of underlying history that shows that's not exactly how it was. Well, Binney comes from that culture where he was like, you know, he thought he was protecting America. He thought he was doing the right thing. He thought he was using his brilliance and his genius because he's a mathematician and cryptographer. And had, you know, like thousands of people under his management at NSA. So he wasn't an underling. He was a seasoned veteran who had been around. And when he saw that they were taking the ways that, you know, the methods that he had conceived to keep Americans safe, and they were pointing those algorithms at Americans, that's very disturbing. Mm-hmm. Because why are they spying on us? Why are we being treated like we're the criminals in a post 9/11 world? How did the Patriot Act and all these other increases in security ever protect us from whatever happened and whatever the causes are of 9/11? Again, that's a whole other story. So mm-hmm. Binney comes at us as somebody who was a veteran for the NSA for 3 decades and says that around 2000, 2001, and he actually points in the interview to this being done before 9/11. So they were picking up everybody's phone records and starting to collect this massive amount of information that the Internet and these devices availed them. And then they got people to fall into it with the smart devices and the apps that are collecting and spying on you. It's like that app Angry Birds sends a whole bunch of information back to Angry Birds headquarters, and then the NSA steals that in the middle. And this is, you know, this is from a conversation with NSA director Mike Hayden. The guy who's running the NSA, he's like, here's how we use Angry Birds to spy on people.
Wait a minute. How can you use Angry Birds, which, by the way, if you don't know what we're talking about, it's a computer game, an app computer game. But how can Angry Birds carry any information to the NSA?
Well, the deep answer is you go to YouTube, you type in Mike Hayden plus Angry Birds, and you'll see him. He's up on a debate panel, and he explains this. And I also included that clip in a recent podcast I did because I think it just shows, it's like, because Angry Birds is already spying on you, they have no problem. There's no legal issue with them just stealing from the Angry Birds stream as it goes back to wherever, Finland or wherever their headquarters is for Angry Birds. I don't use a mobile phone. I only know about apps through adjacent, you know, stories and news on the web. So I've tried to stay away from participating in that whole legacy that they're creating with people, where mm-hmm. people are walking around looking at their smartphones and devices and not paying attention to the real world. I find the real world has a lot more benefit.
I'm glad to hear that. And by the way, I didn't give the website, but for Richard Grove, it's tragedyandhope.com, tragedyandhope.com. And then I believe, Paul, for yours, divergentfilms.com. Is that correct?
It's actually right now it's dvcmediagroup.com. I've switched over from Divergent, so.
Okay, DVC.
Media Group?
Media Group, okay, .com. DVCmediagroup.com, okay? Let's go to Renee in North Carolina. Renee, you're on the air. Go ahead, please. What's on your mind for Richard and Paul?
Yes, but with the whole technology issue in order to control us, and then we have no recourse because our legal system is rigged, corrupt, expensive. The thing is, I'm sure y'all must have thought if there is a way out of this or not. You know, the thing is, because even in alternative media, there seems to be a steering and a playing of the right-left paradigm, you know, trying to tell us that our problem is commies, liberals, feminists. The thing is, if we're always looking to the left, that sets us up, if we pull out in the intersection, to be T-boned from the right. And so the thing is, I don't like any right-left paradigm playing. It's the whole problem, particularly when you look at really who has held power. People generally who have power try to conserve that power, okay? And the police and the military order followers tend to be overwhelmingly right-wing. It has been proven that they will even shoot their own fellow military, or the ones who are still being paid, when some of them have who weren't paid for their work and tried to rise up. They will literally shoot their own fellow military. So the thing is, I just see, I'm looking, actually, because I know y'all have to thought about it, is there a door except for complete collapse of the system? Because I just don't see any more. I think even the alternative is pretty much controlled opposition. I don't think getting Ron Paul in there is going to do a damn bit of good, or any of the others. The thing is, do y'all see any solution except complete collapse?
Okay, good question. Let's ask that question of both Paul and Richard. Anything but complete collapse?
Sure.
Should be the answer?
Yeah, I think Zbigniew Brzezinski gave a talk in the last 10 years where he talked about the biggest thing that the elites have to fear is a massive global political conscious awakening. And I think what he meant by that is that when people actually take the time, like the caller, to become more aware of what's going on, they see beyond the left-right paradigm. They stop participating in the game, the political game. They stop willingly giving their energy to any of the sinkholes that are presented to us by mainstream culture, and they start becoming more self-reliant. And that's what the government is afraid of, is people becoming more self-reliant and less dependent on the government. So, unfortunately, it's not like a massive society-wide thing where everyone's going to wake up at once. It's an individual process. Everyone's going through it at their own pace. And the best thing we can do is be compassionate and conscious in terms of how we wake people up. You don't bludgeon them over the head. You tickle them awake.
Good point.
And that's why we create media. That's the next step. Once you start to learn about these things, I mean, I agree with the caller. The right-left paradigm has only traditionally been there, created to divide and conquer and control people. So if you're going to look at a paradigm, a contrast, it will be the difference between right and wrong, liberty and slavery. And if we looked at things through that lens, then there's no more conservatives and liberals, because liber means free and it also means book. But the liberals are not about freedom, and neither are the conservatives, because people have lost touch with, you know, don't hit, don't steal. If we just boiled it down to the simplicities and we could bring it back to what reality is between individuals, this is how we get along with each other. A book that I would recommend that helps people kind of get out of that box of right-left paradigm, and it's given a lot of times by the people who see those differences, it's like you give it to a friend so they can see the difference, is The Most Dangerous Superstition by Larkin Rose. Because once you understand freedom as an individual, then you understand the fallacy of giving these other collective groups rights that individuals don't have. And if you look at the root cause of a lot of the problems that the caller mentioned, the military being put at arms where they might have to use arms against Americans to disarm them, and they've taken a constitutional oath to do the opposite of that, there's going to be a lot of cognitive dissonance. And we're slipping into what the Nazis had called Amtssprache, where the use of bureaucratic speech can be used to take away the liberties of individuals, and they just see it as a paperwork process. When was the last time you heard someone say, sorry, I'm just doing my job? That's what the Nazis said, and it was proven to be a fallacious line of logic.
Good point. Good point. Well, let me ask the question before we go to a break. What is something that we would be surprised at? How bad is it out there? What is being done against us now? What is being planned against us? And in the dark web, is that an answer, or is that more of the problem?
Well, I think there's, before Paul answers, I think there's two things that's going on. you have the collapse of society at the same time that you have the rise of individual liberty. And they kind of cancels out, and the rise of liberty is actually a bigger phenomenon than the collapse of these terrariums that they've built, where people don't know where their food comes from, don't know what the quality of their water is. All the basics of life we've forgotten so that people can watch Dancing with the Stars or whatever they got on TV this week. And so once we get back to the values of freedom and the habits that make freedom up, self-reliance, self-defense, intellectual self-defense, physical self-defense, there's a big area there. Protecting yourself from the surveillance, that's a form of self-defense. And learning about the history that brings us up to this point so we can understand where we're going. Part of that's Agenda 21, which is still very much in action. They just published a new United Nations study in the past couple weeks that says by the year 2030, they're going to take away poverty across the world. War is going to be a thing of the past. Well, their plan to do all these things is through a total lockdown and to make this whole place into an institutional prison that generations can't get out of and that they're just born into and think it's normal. So if we have an opportunity to let people know, hey, this is what their plans are, this is what they're funding, this is what they're doing, and this is the history behind it, and we keep creating more and more interesting pieces of media to show people that in a very gentle way, like Paul said, tickle them awake. You know, the sun doesn't come up all at once. It comes up in a very gentle way, so it's not just like all of a sudden it's noon. So the process of informing other people of the artificial scarcity, i.e., they think they've learned about the world through school, through university, and through watching media, or like the television news, but that's just a very small slice of the pie, and all these other parts of the pie that you don't know about are adversely affecting us and our liberty until we learn about them and become free.
Okay. Let me quickly, before we go to Paul on that answer, though, let me go to Mike in Tennessee. Mike, you're on the air. Go ahead, please, with Paul and Richard. Go ahead.
Good morning. I was charged with possession of guns, even though the state's witness admitted that I never had possession of guns. Well, then he just changed his narrative to, well, you could have possessed them. Well, the problem is that could have is not a crime. It's a rigged game. The cops, the prosecutors, the judges, the juries, they're all controlled. And in my case, they hate me because I'm independent and self-sufficient. And when I ran for office, I was encouraging others to do the same thing. And I was basically going to shut down large portions of the government in the county where I live, and they couldn't stand that. And then so they had to eliminate me. And they do send innocent people to prison. They do kill innocent people. They silence you. And this is what the general public has got to come to grips with.
It absolutely. Paul, do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I was just going to say that the other way that people wake up is that they get abused. They go through traumatic experience, whether it's at the hands of the government or one of their agencies, and that literally forces somebody to wake up to the reality that the people that are supposed to be there as our representatives and for our benefit are actually have become our oppressors for their own benefit. And so it's unfortunate, like the caller has to go through an experience like that, because it's similar to whistleblowing, right? When you're trying to take a righteous stand against what you see as obvious tyranny, that the interests of tyranny will protect themselves by retaliating against you. And so that's kind of the battle, is that there's all these disincentives out there. And even the knowledge that the NSA spies on us is a huge disincentive for people, and they end up changing their online behavior because they're aware of that. But we can't allow somebody exercising their power over us to be the reason why we don't have our voice heard. So just like the caller made the call today to let us know that he's been railroaded like that, that's an experience that thousands of people are going through, and what they have to do is essentially use the internet to get their voice heard, learn how to speak in a way that connects with people and grabs their attention, and then, you know, connect with all the other people that are going through the similar experience. And, you know, you might be an individual droplet by yourself, but together you become a tidal wave of change. And if people can just wake up to that fact, they won't lose hope, I don't think.
You know, that's an excellent point, that we cannot use that as the excuse just to lay down and let them roll over us. Oh, well, I'm only one. Oh, well, I can't do anything. Oh, well, you know, they've got all the, you know, Blackberries and the fax machines in the world at their disposal, whatever the excuse is. You know, do you have any helpful hints for us, such as, you know, don't get a smartphone, or, you know, stay independent. Anything that either one of you would like to add that we might want to consider doing?
Yeah, I would say if you see something that's a device or technology that has the word smart in front of it, just think of smart as a standing for satellite monitored and remote tracked. That's what SMART stands for to me. And, you know, there's a whole new bunch of devices and appliances coming out that can be tracked because they have network cards in them. So avoid buying a fridge and oven and lights that have network cards, because then those can also be tracked by the NSA.
Okay, very good. We'll be back after this 3-minute break. Phil in Florida, you're up next. Caller for our guest today, Paul Virch and Richard Grove. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with the Power Hour. Welcome back to the Power Hour. It is the final segment of the Power Hour today. Obama is at the United Nations speaking, and he says regimes that fear their own people will crumble. I mean, how prophetic. I think it will. Regimes that fear their own people will crumble. Well, and people do fear the regime in this country, that's for sure. Joining us today are two people who are aware of that, certainly, unfortunately, firsthand experience, Paul Virch and Richard Grove. Let me go to Phil in Florida. Phil, you're on the air. Go ahead, please, with Paul and Richard.
Thank you, Joyce, and thank you, Paul. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Richard. Anyone who hasn't seen the interview of William Binney on the tragedy in Hope, please make the time to watch it. It is really blow you away. So professional. The questioning is fantastic. But that's what got me to call, Joyce, your comment that some of us didn't really appreciate what William Binney was through, went through, and provided. A question I have to ask to all three of you, and I hope you give it some thought, is I was one of those people that wasn't appreciating it. 9/11 has been the reason given for that justifies all this, the war on terror, you know, which carries over to the police state here at home, and all the tyrannical legislation going on up in Canada as well. And my problem with Richard Binney and so many of these other whistleblowers is they know anyone with one eyeball and two brain cells to rub together can get it that 9/11 was an inside job. And these folks, when asked, will not take that step and come forward on 9/11 being an inside job. And I know it's not that simple. Richard Binney retired and got out, and then was a whistleblower. God mm-hmm. bless him.
Okay, but what is your point? What's the point you want to make here?
Could you get the question? How do we get these people to deal with 9/11 publicly?
Okay, all right. The question is 9/11. What can we do to expose really even more than we've already done 9/11? Paul or Richard?
Well, this is Rich. I think that I feel the same way. When I asked Bill Binney about the 9/11, he reflected the, you know, traditional view, because he hasn't had the time because he's been so busy working on his slice of the pie.
He says, well, I've talked to him about that, and he says that, but off air, it was a little bit different in his comment to me.
Okay. Well, what I can see is that people out there who are looking for a good piece of media, there's a recent 9/11 Architects and Engineers presentation with firefighters for 9/11 Truth. And that most recent presentation that they did on September 11th, I think, is an excellent talking point. Get somebody who you think... Go ahead.
Phil, go ahead.
No, that's not my question. I'm talking about guys like Binney and Colleen Rowley, all these people, when they're put in positions of being whistleblowers, they balk. These are the people I'm talking about. Anyone, a third grader, can know that 9/11 is an inside job. They don't have to find out and research it. That's BS.
Well, I think what Phil is saying is that these people are whistleblowers to a point. And then when it gets to that critical point, they kind of cave. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. I can't say. But I think that's the way a lot of people feel about whistleblowers. When Ed Snowden comes out with 9/11 expose, then I'm going to believe he's really the real deal for all of us. I mean, I think he is. But let's do some 9/11 stuff. Richard Grove, Paul Virch, thank you so much for joining us today on the Power Hour.
Thank you, Joyce. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
You bet, Richard. Thank you very much, Richard and Paul. You have a blessed day. And you can get more of this information. It's really an excellent video, Hijacking Humanity. and state of mind also at the Power Mall.